Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you from the Blog Talk Radio studio in the heart of Hudson County. Ladies and gentlemen, you know it's always in Union City, New Jersey. New Jersey's premier journalist, Fernando Uribe, and New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst, Patrick Rivera, bring you Working the Mark right here on Blog Talk Radio. Folks, I hope you're having a wonderful start to your President's Day weekend. A lot to talk about. Certainly in the world of professional wrestling / sports entertainment. And no one better to talk about it and dissect it than my amazing broadcast partner. He is Patrick Rivera. What's up, PR?
What's cracking? I'm PR from PR, the PR superstar. And I'm just happy to be here. We're actually not at the Blog Talk Radio studios. We're actually at the Blog Talk Radio Performance Center.
All right.
Yeah, it's fantastic to be with you here live. And let's chop it up, my friend.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, folks, you know, it is President's Day weekend, but it's also a wrestling-packed weekend as well. Is obviously coming up tomorrow, Saturday, February 19th at 12 noon. We will have WWE's Elimination Chamber. Later in the evening, we'll have Impact Wrestling's No Surrender from New Orleans. So if you love professional wrestling, folks, you're going to be really loving tomorrow as you'll be having it all day long. But at noontime, emanating from Jeddah in Saudi Arabia at the Jeddah Superdome, the Elimination Chamber, the pay-per-view itself, always a very interesting pay-per-view. When it is obviously on, well, now Peacock, and certainly in previous years on the WWE Network, certainly the Chamber match itself is always interesting. But the card itself, Patrick, is looking pretty nice right now. So we got Rey Mysterio against The Miz, two, you know, seasoned veterans, obviously, I think, styles that we've become used to. Who do you like in this match, bro?
I'm going to go with Rey, only because I feel like they're going to open up the show with maybe a nice babyface win. Who knows? I mean, that might be opening match. But regardless of who goes over, I think it's just going to be exactly what they need it to be in terms of where it's positioned in the card. And Rey's the ultimate baby face, and Miz is a pretty darn good heel. So I think it's a pretty good match for them to start off the show with. But who knows? They might have the championship match start. You can't tell.
I'm with you. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm going to go with The Miz. He's taken a few L's lately on pay-per-views. Maybe he's due for a win here. Who knows? But I'm going with The Miz.
Well, he
I'm
came
sure
to play. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah,
but he
that's
came
right.
To play,
that's
so.
Right. And, you know, Maryse might play a factor in the match, as she always does. Who knows? Maybe.
Maryse is not allowed in Saudi Arabia. She's too much. She's too much.
Oh, that's
yeah,
right. That's right.
Customs.
That's right. That's right. We have an oppressive, backward society that they're – that's right. They're performing. That's right. Saudi
Arabia.
Wrong
show, Fernando.
Sorry.
Wrong show. We'll talk –
well, you know.
Else, but anyways.
Got to call like I see it. But maybe this is finally the pay-per-view where – Dominic Mysterio maybe turns on his dad. We've been waiting for that for 3 years now. Who knows? This might be...
He is Eddie's son.
Yeah, well, that's true, too. We'll see. It should be a good match, whether it's the opener or somewhere in the middle of the card. We'll find out. We got a false count anywhere match. I'll be honest with you, dude. This really does nothing for me. Drew McIntyre against Madcap Moss. You got to believe that Happy Corbin will be at ringside. Maybe it plays a factor in the match. Again, I you know, when they drafted McIntyre to SmackDown, I understand that there's a pecking order when it comes to the championship. You know, I'd like to see McIntyre in the title picture. That's not happening right now, but this kind of feud, I don't know really, other than elevating Madcap Moss, which does nothing for me either, other than like the ridiculous, absurd outfit. But, you know, I see McIntyre picking up a win here.
Yeah, I think Drew's going to get the win, but I'm on the opposite end of this. I like Madcap Moss. I think he's been pretty good with the chances he's been given. He looks believable. His shitty jokes and, you know, working with Happy Corbin, I think, are something that are going to kind of help him get over because I'll be honest. I mean, for me, at least personally, the Happy Corbin thing was really interesting to watch, to, like, see how they did it and how they worked it out. And surprisingly, it's worked for him. He's a pretty big heel. He's not a bad fucking worker. And I think it's only up for him, you know. And I think that Madcap Moss, he's got a lot of potential. He's a dude that, you know, you look at him and you see that he can do whatever needs to be done, at least from a wrestling perspective. So I'm looking forward to that match. I don't know about you.
I mean, again, I'm sure it's just one of those filler matches. Hopefully any reports about McIntyre having some neck discomfort, hopefully that'll be unsubstantiated.
That's
again,
mostly gimmick.
To your point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Again, I just think it should be, you know, hopefully it's kind of a quick match. Doesn't really consume too much time considering it's a pretty long card. Moving along, mm-hmm. You know, listen, it's kind of historic. You know, again, it's Saudi Arabia. It's that part of the world where women, you know, aren't really, you know, given too much freedom to wear whatever they want or whatever. But Ronda Rousey, the Royal Rumble winner this year, teams up with Naomi. And mm-hmm. they face the SmackDown Women's Champion Charlotte Flair and Sonya Deville. You got to believe probably they'll be covered up in turtlenecks to wrestle in this match. But, again, I get it. Maybe it's a filler until WrestleMania, until Ronda faces up against Charlotte. You know, Naomi and Sonya Deville, that's been an ongoing feud for months. Maybe this is kind of the culmination of this feud ultimately with this one. I like Ronda and Naomi to win this one at the Superdome in Jeddah.
Yeah, I see Ronda and Naomi winning that one too. I think, honestly, for as backwards as it is, I think that there's been a lot of progress in terms of like them being able to put women wrestling in a match on a billboard to promote it in the city and outside of the arena. So, you know, small steps, but I mean, WWE is actually really helping kind of progress these things in a strange way. I mean, this isn't just the quote-unquote blood money deal that everybody likes to cry about. This is you know, them actually trying to do something there, you know, and them trying to actually do something good, you know. So, yeah, I mean, I think the faces are going to go over. Ronda's obviously a big name. I'm sure they know who Ronda is over there. And, yeah, pretty simple, straightforward match on that one.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully this thing with Naomi and Sonya Deville gets put to rest already. It's been, I don't know, it was entertaining at first, but it just seems like Vince is
just
parading.
You don't like long-term booking?
Well, you know, not in this case. I'm kind of over – I've never liked the whole Adam Pearce, Sonya Deville official storyline. It does nothing for me. It's like if Vince is on TV, it should just be Vince as the authority figure. This idea of delegating or – you know, the middleman, Adam.
Can't go back.
They do nothing for me. What's that?
They can't go back. I mean, how long has it been since they first did the commissioner gimmick? I mean, what, before that, Gorilla Monsoon, Jack Tunney, you know what I'm saying? Like, come on. Like, they always have to have some sort of authority figure. Vince comes in because Vince is a personality, and for better or worse, he's going to get views because the marks despise him, but they still love him.
Yeah.
It's a very strange abusive relationship that we've covered in previous episodes of Working the Marks with Fernando and Pat. Not a shameless piece of promotion in the middle of the show, but
there you go.
You know, take with that what you will. I don't know. I'm for the authority figure. I think Adam Pearce does the part well. I think Sonya, they found something good for her to do. She gets heat for better or worse. And she really kind of helped Naomi have a purpose instead of just wandering around being an athletic wrestler on the roster.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And again, Sonya Deville isn't one of those women I think that Vince is going to be pushing to the moon in a title picture, I think, ever again. I think, you know, she served her purpose, I think, at the time when she was teaming with Mandy Rose a couple years ago. I think now she's, I think, uncomfortable in this role, and I think she's performed really, really well on camera.
Sonya can talk.
Yeah,
and Sonya can say believable things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like she can make
you
believe that she doesn't like something. You know? Yeah, and she's a badass too. So you believe that she hated Naomi and vice versa, and that's why I think that program kind of worked.
I agree. It'll be interesting to see exactly whether this culminates this feud or not. Moving on, another tag match on the card. The SmackDown Tag Team Championships on the line. The Usos defend against the Viking Raiders. Again, you know, you look at the Viking Raiders, Pat, for the last few years. I mean, when you watch them on the independent scene, you saw how menacing of a gimmick it was. Obviously, they went into NXT. They did a few rebrandings. Again, this match serves its purpose in terms of getting the Usos over. I don't see the Viking Raiders winning here. I see the Usos taking the tag titles into WrestleMania. We'll find out, obviously, in the next few weeks, leading up to April 1st and 2nd, collectively for WrestleMania in Dallas, where, you know, the Usos, who they'll face. I mean, maybe a battle royal. Maybe, who knows, maybe a gauntlet match. But I see the Usos retaining here.
I could see it going either way, to be honest. I mean, maybe the Usos could win it back at WrestleMania 37. But I don't know. Or is it 38? Are we coming up on 38?
38, that is correct, yes.
Okay, so WrestleMania 38. I don't know. I mean, it could go either way. You know, they could have them drop it now just to get a pop in Saudi Arabia, you know, with the new champs. And, you know, have the Usos go over and get the belts at WrestleMania. But I'll be honest, I've been a fan of the Viking Raiders since they were War Machine. Unfortunately, they couldn't keep that name when they ended up working for WWE. And they've been through quite a few experiences, even a Viking experience. So it's been a little difficult for them, to say the least. They've tried to show a lot of personality with those guys, whether people like it or not. That's what it was intended to do. And they showed that those guys have at least some character to kind of be a little bit more WWE-centric with the goofy, soap opera-esque type stuff. But at the end of the day, in the ring, those guys can go. And the Usos, in my opinion, are the best tag team in the world. And the Viking Raiders, that's another tag team, by the way, that's better than FTR.
Okay.
The Viking Raiders are a fantastic team, and doesn't matter who really goes over in this situation. It's just going to be a good match, I think. And it could possibly be a sleeper on the card.
I agree with you. I think it'll be very interesting to watch. And again, whether or not this sort of is the payoff and ends the feud, we'll find out, obviously, tomorrow during Elimination Chamber. The first of the two chamber matches, the chamber match for the Raw Women's Championship number one contendership, will consist of Bianca Belair versus Liv Morgan versus Rhea Ripley versus Doudrop versus Nikki A.S.H. And the new surprise entrant this week, which I was very happy to see, Alexa Bliss. A lot of personalities here. I think a lot of good workers. It should be, again, I think the women's, since they started doing women's chamber matches, I think they've all been entertaining. They've all provided a lot of good highlights. I would argue here it's kind of tough to call, because you kind of make the case that, hey, you know, Alexa coming back, maybe they want to throw her back in the title picture. Doudrop was just in the title picture. Liv Morgan, obviously the fans are really getting behind her. Tragically, you know, I'm not a fan of her or gimmick. I don't like it. I think it's corny. I mean, whatever. But I foresee Bianca Belair winning the Elimination Chamber and thus getting her rematch, or at least a chance for the Raw Women's Championship coming up now in WrestleMania. Not a fan of her. I don't like the gimmick. I just don't like some girl hopping around twirling her hair. I don't know.
Can I ask you a question? Seriously?
Sure.
How do you like Britt Baker, but you don't like Bianca Belair?
Britt Baker is the corniest
thing we've ever seen. The whole gimmick is corny. And you don't like Bianca Belair? Bianca Belair is a better wrestler.
I just don't understand something. Okay, my fandom for Britt Baker is predicated more so on the fact that I'm devoted to her, you know, her fiance, that I am a huge Adam Cole fan. I simply like Britt Baker because I think she's entertaining, from the sense that she's a real life dentist, that she has, she's a doctor in dentistry. I respect that. Now, again, is she a great wrestler? No. Has she ever been voted best?
She's
women
not even
wrestler?
The best
yes,
wrestling
she
dentist. She's not even that, the best wrestling dentist.
Well,
okay?
You can make
Isaac
the case.
Yankum's
Isaac
the better
Yankum
wrestling
was.
Dentist.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure about Worker, but yeah, no, but you're right. I mean, listen, I just don't like, and I'm sure people listening will be like, oh, there's Fernando gaslighting or dog whistling. No, if it was a white girl from Kansas marching down the ring, hopping and skipping, twirling her hair, I'd still have a problem with it. It does nothing for me. Now, I can separate the fact that I don't like the gimmick, but Bianca Belair is an incredible athlete. She's come a long way. She's a great worker. She's got a lot better on the microphone. Again, I'm going to give her due. She checks off a lot of boxes in terms of what we're looking for.
She's a legitimate athlete.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, no, she is. She is. She checks off a lot of boxes about what Vince is looking for in terms of WWE superstars, especially in the women's division. I will concede all those points, bro. I just don't like the gimmick. It could be, I don't care if she was white, black, Asian, Hispanic. I don't care for a girl hopping and skipping, you know, hopping down the bunny trail, you know, with twirling her hair.
Nobody said anything about race, bro. All right.
What's that? Well, you know, people who know
Nobody said anything about race, bro, you know. I'm just saying.
Well,
they both have sassy girl gimmicks. They both have sassy girl gimmicks, okay? But one's a fucking dentist. And the other one's an Olympic athlete. You know,
that's fair. No, that's fair. That's fair. She's a collegiate athlete, certainly, you know, All-American, absolutely, at the University of Tennessee. No question about Bianca Belair. I think she's, again, the future in that women's division. I'm not a fan of the gimmick, but I'm a fan of her in-ring work because she has come a long way since we've seen her really on the scene.
Okay.
I think
that's fair.
Listen, Dr. Uribe
That's fair,
will,
Professor. That's
Dr.
fair.
Dr. Uribe can be objective. Dr. Uribe can be objective.
All right.
I see Bianca Belair going over in the chamber and being the number one contender.
Me too. Me too. I mean, absolutely. I mean, look, from the moment Becky came back at SummerSlam and squashed her and, you know, kind of took an underhanded approach to beating her, they've been planting the seed in people's heads that Becky is afraid of her. And I think if you're going to have Charlotte versus Ronda, then the only logical solution is Bianca versus Becky. And I think it's going to be a fantastic match. And I'm really excited to see what happens there. But who knows? They might swerve us for all we know. We don't know what could happen. But if I'm really looking at it from a way like yeah, this is probably what's going to happen, it's Bianca is going to go over. Come on. How can't you have that match at WrestleMania?
Well, I have to say that because it's going to be in Saudi Arabia, they might have to kind of tuck in their hair. I might just get the delight of my day to make sure she can't twirl it as she goes down to the ring front. So, okay, I'm kind of excited about this. You know, she has to put her hair in a bun and she can't twirl it. So maybe, you know, might not be so bad for me after all that.
She might cornrow it. She might do a million different things with it. But
maybe, of course. No, don't worry about it.
You know, but I think she's going to go over.
I agree with you. And, of course, obviously her winning the chamber in our predictions sets her up to face the winner of the Raw Women's Championship match, obviously, during the card itself. Becky Lynch, who's had the title since SummerSlam, will be defending against Lita. You know, it's funny about how us fans, the way we sort of react to Vince bringing back legends and Hall of Famers and how we react to them. Lita, certainly a pioneer in the women's division, going back to the mid-2000s with Trish and those classics she had, you know, I'm not really – listen, I think Lita serves a purpose. She's been in multiple women's Royal Rumbles. She always gets a pop. People get nostalgic about Lita. I get it. You know, I think it's a way for a legend to put, again, Becky over. Becky has been the hottest women's wrestler on this planet, arguably since turning on Charlotte Flair at SummerSlam 2018 in Brooklyn. Again, I think Lita will be entertaining. I think it'll tell a great story. Becky, I predict Becky's going to win this. How about you, Pat?
Yeah, I think Becky's going to win it. I think it's a great rub for Becky. I think it's them, you know, kind of giving Becky her due as the GOAT of women's wrestling in WWE. And yeah, I mean, it's going to be exactly what it needs to be. And it's going to be a fun match. Lita will do her moonsaults. She'll show her thong and all that good stuff. Who knows? Maybe Jeff Hardy might get rehired and come out for that match. And Matt, I don't know. They might come through the forbidden door. If there is a forbidden door anymore, but
apparently there is.
Becky's going over.
Which we'll get to later, but maybe.
Yeah.
We'll see. It should be a good match. Obviously, I think kind of elevating Becky more after being another legend, I think is going to do wonders for Becky's legacy. Now, speaking of old timers that we don't mind seeing, that takes us now to the Universal Championship, to an old timer and a Hall of Famer that I absolutely abhor. I absolutely despise, I absolutely detest. But Vince feels the need to bring out Bill Goldberg. Again, it's supposedly what is his last match of his contract that he just signed a few years ago. He will be challenging Roman Reigns, the number one wrestler in the world, despite what some magazines, publications will tell you. Roman Reigns is the best wrestler in the world right now. He'll be defending against Bill Goldberg, as I like to refer to him. I get it, Pat. It serves a purpose, you know. I mean, only in WWE will a Jewish man get cheered in a Muslim-oriented country. Only leave it up to Vince McMahon to have Goldberg get cheered in Saudi Arabia, any other part of the Middle East, anyone who's Jewish would get vilified. I mean, hey, that's the magic of Vince McMahon.
Yeah, Vince is the Grand Wizard, the Grand Wizard Oz, not the Grand Wizard, you know, those other people. But I think this is Vince honoring his contract. This is Vince saying, hey, Bill, who do you want to go out to? And Bill saying,
and try not
I want
to
put over Roman Reigns.
Try not to injure or maim.
He won't injure. It's going to be simple. They're going to keep it very simple. They understand what it is. And they're going to put Bill in a position where, he puts Roman over. For all we know, Goldberg could win. You never know, man.
God help us.
You know, again, there's always that slight chance for every type of match and booking decision. Well, but, I mean, you got to look at it like this. Like, they didn't give Roman the honor, the quote-unquote honor, of beating Goldberg before when he was supposed to face him at WrestleMania because of everything that ended up happening with COVID and whatnot. So this is their opportunity to make good on that to Bill, to honor their contract with Bill, to finish it out, and to give Roman, you know, another feather under his cap.
Well, again, let's hope that this is the last of Bill Goldberg, I'm just so over Bill Goldberg.
Why?
Well, because Bill Goldberg's a guy that's never really cared about the business, never cared to get better in the ring, never cared other than making money, which is fine. I don't begrudge someone for being a capitalist. I'm probably the biggest capitalist there is out there and enabler of capitalism and defender of it. But, I mean, listen, I just think that Goldberg's been sloppy forever. He doesn't do anything for me in terms of nostalgia. I get it. You know, it's those T-shirts. It gives Vince an opportunity to drag him out there and for Marks to go crazy and relive the Attitude Era. Relive the Attitude Era where he was booked.
Exactly. You got to think about that, man. There's a whole new generation of kids that never lived seeing Bill Goldberg, you know, rise up and be the guy in WCW and all that stuff. So for them, this is prime nostalgia. I mean, whether you like it or not, there's an audience. You know what I'm saying? And everybody likes their trash wrestling. You like your trash wrestling. You're an Adam Cole fan. But, there's a lot of people who like different trash wrestling. But, look, Bill serves a purpose, for better or worse. I'm not a fan, but I understand his purpose in wrestling. And I understand what Vince, or at least I think what I understand what Vince is trying to do with him, which is make money at the end of the day. So Vince is honoring the contract.
Absolutely.
And it's as simple as that. If he comes back and he spears somebody and they do a segment with him, whatever, man. Who cares? You know what I'm saying?
Pat, I don't know, man. We've already lived through these god-awful Universal Championship runs of Goldberg, first being Kevin Owens, then being The Fiend. It did nothing for anybody other than make Vince money, which is fine.
It did nothing for anybody. Tell that to
Vince
who filled the stadium with Brock versus Goldberg as part of their main events.
Well, I get that.
Because it was for a championship, and it was part of their main events, man.
No, I get that. I get that.
How did that do nothing for anybody? You might not like it, but you're not meant to like it. That's not for you, though. That's nostalgia for different people. You know?
No, I get that. I think more as a fan, I think it's just because we lived during the Attitude Era. We have a pretty fresh recollection in our subconscious about what we liked, what we didn't like. And again, you know, and this is where the Markism in me will come out. I mean, being a devoted fan of Bret the Hitman Hart, you know, Goldberg ended his career prematurely with reckless, irresponsible behavior in the ring. Goldberg never bothered getting better. He never tried. You could tell that he just cared about
Goldberg
making money.
Goldberg was enabled by Bischoff and everybody that was backstage in WCW. Nobody ever told him to get better. And Bret even acknowledged that himself. If Brett knew that he was a problem, then maybe Brett should have worked a different style match. I'm sorry.
No, that's fair.
And I got
that's
nothing
fair.
But respect for Brett the Hitman Hart. But maybe he should have gone to creative, and they should have worked out something where he rolls him up, where Goldberg goes for a spear on him, and Brett leapfrogs him. He hits the corner. Brett schoolboys him. You know what I'm saying? Like, you leave it where, like, Brett outsmarts him, which makes sense because at that point, Brett was obviously a much more seasoned wrestler than he was.
No,
so,
I get that.
Why not book it different? You know? There's a lot of people to blame. I mean, look, again, I'm not a Goldberg fan, but I recognize the fact that, like, you know, people make a lot of mistakes. Like, Brett, I'm sure in his mind, the way he was thinking, because he's proud of himself as a worker, he's going to be like, you know what? I can carry Goldberg to a good match. You know what I'm saying? Which is a challenge. And I'm sure that he tried to do that. But maybe I think, you know, in hindsight, you know, it should have been a different type of match, Ben. You know what I'm saying? Because
no,
the guy was
listen,
very
I,
reckless, and he
I'm
was unfortunately
you.
Enabled because they were making money.
No, Pat, listen, you make great points. I just, again, I've never been a fan. I'm hoping that, again, this is the last date that Vince ever signs him to. I think there are plenty of other legends you could probably bring in that you want to give a rub to an up-and-coming star. I just think I'm tired of Goldberg. You know, I get it. It's not for me. You know, fine, you know, it's a new generation of kids that never saw Goldberg. I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, why subject him to this garbage? But, again, you know, Vince knows how to make money. Vince knows how to stir up the nostalgia. It should be hopefully a quick match. Roman goes over. You build on that legacy going into WrestleMania. And, of course, speaking of WrestleMania, the Elimination Chamber match on the men's side will deal with WWE Champion Bobby Lashley defending against Brock Lesnar, against also AJ Styles, against Seth Rollins, against Matt Riddle, and also against Austin Theory, which a lot of people are looking at as Vince McMahon's sort of new ball of clay that he's molding into a potential main eventer in the future. I think this is a really good match, a lot of contrasting styles in the chamber. You know, I'd like to see Bobby Lashley retain. I don't like the idea of Bobby just being a transitional champion. I think Lashley, if you remember, when he won the title from Miz, for a better part of 2021, he was a really convincing champion. He drew gate. He sold merch. I think he was, again, a menacing champion. I'd like to see Bobby retain. I don't want to see Bobby be another casualty of the transitional championship. But who knows? I'm picking Bobby Lashley.
All right. I like this match. I like all the participants. I like what this match could be. I think it's going to be really cool. It's going to be interesting. I'm mostly excited about Matt Riddle and Brock Lesnar mixing it up at some point in the match, because that's going to be interesting to see how Brock reacts to Matt and his antics of the past. I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of torn on this one. I want Bobby to keep the title because I like Lashley as champion. I feel like he should keep it. And I don't really feel like Roman and Brock necessarily needs it. But maybe they want to put the title on Brock, have Brock get his win back because that was a bogus win. And, you know, maybe champion versus champion and do it for Roman's title so that way you could at least do Brock and Bobby later on at, like, maybe SummerSlam, let's say.
Well, folks, and remember, you know, Lesnar is still the Rumble winner, so he can still invoke his championship match. I mean, again, he's been booked in this chamber match. You could very much have him winning, which wouldn't surprise me, and then setting up the title versus title at WrestleMania, whether it's night one or night two in Dallas remains to be seen. Should be a good chamber match. Should be a good pay-per-view. Again, coming to you from Saudi Arabia.
Premium
tomorrow,
live 12... event.
Yes, tomorrow, you know, 12 p.m. Pay-per-view on Peacock.
It's a premium live event. You're not paying per view anymore. That's an antiquated term,
at least
for WWE pay-per-views. It's a pay-per-month. You're paying per month to subscribe to Peacock to watch the pay-per-views. It's not paper. That's an antiquated term. Sorry.
Well, PR, I'm a bit of a traditionalist. I still call it professional wrestling. I still call it pay-per-views. I mean, that's just me.
It's sports entertainment, and it's a premier live event, all right?
I can't. I can't sometimes. But it should be a good card, folks, tomorrow starting at 12 Eastern time. Let's go around the news cycle here. Obviously, two big news bits this week. Number one, it seems like Cody Rhodes' contract with AEW has expired. It seems as if Tony Khan and him could not come to an agreement. There's been a lot of chatter on the internet, Pat. You know, a lot of different wrestling, quote, journalists have been opining based on their sources. It seems like on one day, Cody's done with AEW. He's no longer an executive vice president. It seems like there's interest from Vince to bring him into WWE. What's fact and fiction, bro?
I don't know, man. This one's tough to call. But I'm going to say let's watch this play out. And I think that's the most interesting part of it all, is that it's making people think. You know what I'm saying? There's a school of thought that it's a work, but then they canceled the show, the second season of their reality TV show that he was doing. I mean, at this point to me, it seems like, you know, they couldn't negotiate for them to stay on as EVPs. And, you know, Khan just wanted him to work, and he just wanted to incentivize the wrestling instead of letting him retain that role and be able to kind of slow down with the wrestling, focus on the entertainment aspect, and then, you know, be an EVP. But I guess Khan doesn't want anybody involved in creative anymore. And, you know, there's a lot of rumors about what's going on there, what has been going on there. Nobody knows, but Cody could be gone, you know, but this also could be an incredibly elaborate work. And it could make him probably the biggest heel in wrestling, you know, somehow.
Pat, let's be honest. Why would Tony Khan need anybody in creative? Apparently, you know, and we'll get to a little bit of why that's relevant and significant in a few minutes. But, no, I'm with you. I think this is a very interesting story. Certainly, you know, whoever has leverage here remains to be seen. I don't see Cody as this tremendous needle mover. I get it if Vince wants to sign him and have somebody defect from AEW to WWE. I don't think Vince really cares about that. Vince is very secure.
Yeah, but they could bring him in hot. They could bring him in hot, man. And they could have him beat up Roman after the title match or something, you know, give him the crossroads. Everybody go nuts, you know. Everybody be like, holy shit, like the forbidden door is open or something, or maybe he signed or who knows what, you know. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that they could do with this. Mm-hmm. And if they do it at the beginning instead of waiting to do it, you know, then, I mean, if you bring him in for a mid-card feud, come on, man, what a waste.
Yeah.
Especially off all the heat, you know, that he's coming former EVP and stuff. But, yeah.
Well, I agree. And I think for a lot of marks online, I think ideally, I mean, I said we've talked off the air about this. I think maybe there's a small percentage of marks that at one point it would have been intriguing perhaps. If Triple H's health was better, you know, maybe setting up Brandy and Cody against Stephanie and Triple H, you know, the small portion of the marks that kind of would like that. I don't think an overwhelming majority of them would, but that was something that I think was looked upon as a dream match. It's not going to be the case, clearly. It seems like Paul Levesque is resting at home, rightfully so.
But that's a waste.
It seems like.
That's a waste.
Yeah.
That's a waste. Even if they could do that, that's a waste. Because like, for what? You know, bring him in hot. He's coming in from AEW, you know? Like,
yeah.
Come on. You got to do it that way.
I'm with you. Listen, it could be very interesting next couple of weeks to see what happens here, whether it's a work, whether it's legit. We'll find out, obviously. I think it's certainly going to make the road to WrestleMania that much more intriguing. In other news, obviously, people are kind of, I don't know, in an uproar. You know, it's been... it's been 19 years since WrestleMania 19 in Seattle. And apparently, you know, if you saw Kevin Owens' promo this week on Raw, obviously where he was kept out of the chamber, he was sort of, you know, making fun of the cities that he was in. He was in, you know, they were in, I can't remember what city they were in last week, but he was sort of ridiculing that city. He was ridiculing about not being able to go to WrestleMania, but he also was making fun of Texas. And once that promo cut, you know, sure enough, Monday night, you start seeing around the news feed that Vince McMahon apparently is talking to Stone Cold Steve Austin. He hasn't wrestled a match in 19 years. Clearly, you want to sell out WrestleMania 38 both nights in Dallas, Texas. The facility holds 100,000 seats plus. Hey, what better way to really galvanize people than to see a Dallas boy like Stone Cold Steve Austin come out of retirement for a match with Kevin Owens? Obviously, maybe not a traditional wrestling match. Maybe a gimmick. That rumor's been running rampant, bro. I don't know. What are you hearing?
What? What? I don't know, man. I mean, I think they're going to go full-blown Texas mode with this show. They're going to have Taker. They're going to have Sean. They're going to have Steve. You know, I mean, they might even have George W. Bush be like guest referee or something, or like enforcer on the outside or something. I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do.
Maybe Alex Jones, though. Maybe Alex Jones will be the timekeeper, you know, maybe.
Yeah, Troy Aikman's going to show up there. He's going to be like, is that Jay-Z? No, it's Troy Aikman. Oh, my God, Troy Aikman's here. You know, and I don't know. He'll get a concussion or something. But I think they're going full-blown Texas mode. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Steve comes out, does a little bit more than a little thing with Kevin Owens, and, you know, that'll be cool. And I'm sure Kevin will be really happy about that, because who wouldn't be happy to work with Steve Austin?
And listen, let's be honest about Steve. I mean, it's been 19 years since that classic against The Rock in Seattle at WrestleMania 19. He's still in great shape. You can tell he still works out. He's still very active. You know, not doing really movie roles anymore. You've pretty much been, you know, concentrating on the Broken Skull Sessions podcast with WWE. Obviously, the Broken Skull Sessions overall. Again, he's 57 years old. He's still in great shape. I think, you know, I'm sure Vince and him have been talking. Obviously, the rumors are running rampant from reliable sources. Not Uncle Dave, not Brian Alvarez, not some of the others. But, you know, legitimate sources like Wade Keller with, you know, PW Torch and others. This might, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. I'd love to see Steve Austin. I've seen him in person wrestling. It'd be great to see him on the big stage one more time. I'm sure it'll be some sort of brief match, bro. Maybe a street fight, maybe a Texas death match, you know, in Texas for once. I don't know. I doubt it'll be death, obviously. But it'll be – talk about nostalgia. Man, that will just blow the roof of Cowboy Stadium in Arlington, Texas, bro.
Well, I think Steve's going to show up.
What?
And I think he's going to drink a beer.
What?
I think he's going to drink another beer.
What?
I think he's going to drink another beer.
What?
I think he's going to drink another beer.
What?
I think he's going to give a stunner.
What?
I think he's going to stomp a mud hole.
What?
I think he's going to walk it dry.
What?
And that's
what?
The bottom line. Because Patrick Rivera said so.
Right. There you go. It's something to keep an eye out for, man. The news cycle has been crazy the last 5 days. Anything else, man, you've been keeping your eye on in the news cycle?
Nah, nothing really. I mean, there's been the talk of the Sean AJ match. That's what people have been talking about lately. I don't know, man. I wouldn't say no, you know what I'm saying? But I think if anybody could work with Sean and, like, get something good out of him at this age, you know, because – but then again, I never doubt Sean. But, like, at this age, I would say it's AJ. And that would be interesting. And you know what? Fuck it. Japan does it all the time. They roll out, like, Muda. I mean, Sean's just as big, you know, if not bigger than Muda. So why not? You know, it'd be good to see the GOAT one more time. I mean, I think nobody had a better second half of their career than Sean. You know,
that's
Sean,
right.
When he came
that's
back,
right.
He was in big stuff. So, why not, man? I think it'd be cool, and I think AJ would like it, too.
I think it'll be – listen, I think that creates a lot of dream matches, not just, you know, playing WWE 2K on our PlayStations or Xboxes. I mean, we can really, really see this unfold in real life, and I think that's going to be a plus for wrestling fans, especially for – you know, selling tickets and marketing WrestleMania, as you said, it could be an all Texas show. And you know what?
Imagine this. Sean tuning up the band in the corner, stomping, goes for the kick. AJ catches his leg. Styles clash. You know what I'm saying? Cool stuff like that.
Amazing.
Or AJ going for the forearm, missing Sean super kick. Bam. You know, there's a lot of great possibilities. But yeah, this is a fantasy matchup. It's a video game matchup.
Absolutely.
Let's see if it happens.
Listen, I think you're right. And it seems like maybe an all Texas type of theme, WrestleMania. I would love that. I'm as big a fan of the freedom loving state of Texas as there is. So I'm excited. So I think it'll be something to definitely keep an eye out for. But folks, you know, our topic this week that Patrick and I have really, really been sort of dwelling on and really, really been itemizing is, and it's very simple because, you know, we started thinking to ourselves, you know, why are AEW fans so sensitive? And you could see it on the dirt sheets. You could see it on social media, especially on social media, where it seems like there's a large portion of AEW fans, ladies and gentlemen, that get easily triggered. They don't like a critique of their brand of wrestling that they love. It seems like they get very fickle about any sort of backlash that's levied on Tony Khan and his style of booking and the presentation of it, of all the wrestling. I got to tell you, Patrick, I mean, listen, I love pro wrestling. I watch everything. You know, I'll be watching, you know, Elimination Chamber tomorrow and Impact Wrestling's No Surrender later on in the evening. I'm going to the Impact show in Philadelphia later in March. I watch NWA. I'll be watching, obviously, other shows, you know, and I love pro wrestling. There's a niche audience for everybody. But it's really funny, though, when you see online especially AEW fans get so triggered when it comes to how they're viewed and how, at the end of the day, Vince McMahon has gotten it right more times than he's gotten it wrong for almost half a century. And I get it, you know, AEW's still in its infancy, but they still keep doing a lot of things wrong on television, in booking, in presentation. And it just seems, it's crazy to me that AEW fans get so sensitive when either podcast hosts, whether from Jim Cornette to Conan and Disco Inferno to others, that, you know, hey, they're just trying to be objective, but it comes off as critical. I just have to laugh when AEW fans take to social media and just get all sanctimonious with their manufactured outrage. I think it's always good for a laugh, bro.
Well, I mean, look, I understand that, you know, this is a niche audience. This is the Dave Meltzer Wrestling Observer Newsletter audience. You know, this is the hipster Mark audience, you know, the people that, you know, think it's ironic to go to like a PWG show on the weekend and they drink their IPAs, which my friend CC says tastes like cat piss. But, you know, I wonder why, how he knows how cat piss tastes, but that's a whole other conversation. He has a thin mustache. I just think that, you know, they want their thing to succeed, right? And they're finally starting to get the pieces to be able to succeed more. But the problem is that Tony Khan isn't doing hot things. He isn't doing things that are going to draw people. He's not drawing casual fans. You know what I'm saying? He's stuck with that Wrestling Observer Newsletter audience, and he wants to just continue to, like, you know, feed them and feed them and feed them in hopes that, like, maybe it'll rain on them or something and they'll multiply like gremlins. But it's not the case, you know? And he has to your point in previous episodes where we've talked about AEW, he needs to kind of grow their media presence a little bit more, you know? He needs to get the Johnny Knoxville. You know, he should try and get Kanye West. You know how many people would tune in just to see Kanye West? I mean, he's got the money, you know? I mean, if he's not stalking Pete Davidson or something, he could show up. You know, but there's so many things that he should be doing that he's not doing to grow his audience past the Mark audience. And it's kind of easy to look at it and to criticize it, you know, if you're somebody who knows anything about wrestling and, you know, you're a casual wrestling fan or somebody that used to follow wrestling maybe 10 or 20 years ago, but you're not really into it anymore. You know, you're happy it's still around, but you're not really into it anymore, you know? I mean, these are the people that Tony Khan should have been picking up, you know? If you would have had CM Punk come in hot, do something hot, or be interesting, or do a talking program, you know, where he gets over the young guys, but he's still, like, people are tuning in to see if he's going to finally wrestle, you know? If you brought in Bryan Danielson and had him beat Kenny Omega immediately, and you didn't mess around with that stupid ranking system and all these dumb things that kind of prevent him from booking the best stuff that he can at times, you know, he would be in a better position, man. And I think a lot more people would respect him. But I think he's going to just send out these people. And, I mean, if he ends up getting Gabe Sapolsky, that'll be a good move for him. Then you could see things getting positive. If he gets Regal backstage as an agent or something, then things are going to get better. You know, because now you're not going to have these guys do these useless things in the middle of the week when 800,000 people are tuning in and maybe break their arm or God knows, you know, worse. You know, so... This is what I think he's missing out on. These are the key things, and I think the fans get triggered because they don't like to hear it. And instead of them like being like, yeah, you know what, these are the things that kind of suck about AEW and it needs to be better, they just kind of see what WWE's doing and just criticize that and talk about how great it is because they have this darling that was there that got released for whatever reason. I don't know.
You raise a good point, and we've talked about it in previous episodes where, again, I think Tony Khan continues to drop the ball as it pertains to, you know, making the product more mainstream, getting celebrities. I mean, case in point, this past Wednesday on Dynamite, okay, for all, you know, for everyone who loves Cobra Kai on Netflix and loves that series, you know, seeing Martin Cove show up on Dynamite with Britt Baker, for those of you who don't watch Cobra Kai, obviously that's John Kreese. From the series. I mean, yeah, that's, you know what? Those are little baby steps, but it needs to be quicker. You know, you need to get more celebrities on the show. You need to make it more mainstream because at the end of the day, I think we talked about this off the air where, you know, and we'll talk about today's breaking news about the Wrestling Observer Newsletter, when it comes to promoter of the year, I mean, let's be honest. You know, last Sunday we watched the Super Bowl, and congratulations to the Los Angeles Rams. Well, guess what? After holding the Lombardi Trophy up in the air, well, I mean, after holding the Lombardi Trophy, guess what? A lot of the players on the field were holding. They were holding WWE Championship belts with the Rams, you know, plates on them. And guess what?
Yes,
that's a mainstream thing. And you know what? This is where Tony Khan. It's really funny to me where, you know, AEW enjoys being on a national network now like TBS. TBS is much more easier to find on basic cable channels and streaming services as opposed to TNT. You know what? The NHL is on TNT. Guess what? Baseball, if it does start on time, right, whether it's the Braves or anything else, this is where Tony Khan's got to take advantage. Get some of your stars out there. Bring in people from TBS. Not people from Go Big Show. I don't really care about that show. I mean, I get that Rosario Dawson's a mainstream actress. You know, fine, bring her in, but bring in other actors, actresses, singers. I mean, you know, you bring in Snoop Dogg for an appearance on Dynamite maybe almost 2 years ago, and you don't follow up with that. This is where Tony Khan, again, if you're the promoter of the year, you need to be promoting and, you know, get mainstream people. Yeah, it was great to see Martin Cove this week, but get Ralph Macchio, get William Zabka. These are mainstream stars that make that series famous, that people watch. Get other athletes in here. I just, again, and when you are critical of AEW and say they're not doing enough to, you know, relate to a mainstream audience, you know, AEW fans take to social media and they get very sensitive. And I just think it's funny where, you know, Vince has the blueprint on this. He's been doing it for almost 40 years. Again, folks, let's not forget. Back in WrestleMania 1 in 1985, guess what? During the infancy of MTV, what did he do? He gambled, rolled the dice, and joined up with MTV. And MTV was, guess what? You saw Hulk Hogan. You saw Mr. T. You saw WrestleMania get advertised on MTV, which was at the time and to some extent a popular music video channel. And Vince was smart to do that for the foreseeable future, get celebrities involved every time and any time as possible. Tony Khan just thinks, well, our audience can just suffice. No, because 2 weeks ago, they had 1.1 and change million people tuned into Dynamite. And this past Wednesday, it was flatter than the Mets in October in Citi Field, where it was maybe 850,000 people tuned into Dynamite. That's a real disappointment there. And I don't know what Tony Khan, I don't know if it's a panic mode that he should be in, but I'd be panicking if I were Tony Khan, Patrick.
Well, to your point, Fernando, I actually have some numbers. This one comes from a friend to the show, at AEW Botches. And again, I'm going to have to use some adult language. Fucking yikes. AEW Dynamite viewership in the dumpster. January 26th, 1,100,000. February 2nd, 954,000. February 9th, 1,129,000. February 16th, 869,000. That's a 24% drop. Okay? A 24% drop. So, as this Twitter user said, now this number is a game changer. Mwahahaha. Expect a flurry of special announcements from Tony. I mean, look, they're goofing on the stuff that he's doing. They're goofing on all the announcements because the ratings aren't backing that up. I mean, you had Keith Lee and Jay White debut, and granted, both are very good wrestlers, but what did that do? What did that do? That wasn't a game changer. That was nothing. That's another good worker in a company that has no direction as far as their booking goes. You know, they're waiting forever. Oh, long-term booking, long-term. Well, we did this in the demo. We did that in the demo. Well, guess what? The people that these advertisers, they know that they're going to get it wholesale at WWE. And some weeks it might not be there, but overall it's going to be there because people are going to tune into that because people know that that's a steady wrestling product. And they need to get to that point. They need to provide something hot to be able to compete. And I think, again, a lot of fans are just happy with the fact that they have all these good wrestlers, but they're not really making any noise. And it's just a wait and see. Oh, you're going to see. You're going to see. I mean, you know, again, it goes back to Punk and Bryan. You didn't bring these guys in hot. They've been chanting CM Punk's name for 7 years. You bring him in and you have him wrestle a kid. No offense to Darby Allin, but that's a fact. Like, nobody wants to see that. This was a guy who was the longest reigning WWE champ of the modern era for a while. You know, you want to put him in something hot. And they didn't do that. And they waited, you know. And the match with Darby was good, don't get me wrong. But come on, got to do better than that.
I agree. And the fact that when people take to social media and voice these opinions, a lot of AEW fans, and you even see whether it's fans themselves, on again, on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, on TikTok, you know, it's one thing where they get sensitive. But we know the AEW apologists, right, which kind of helps us segue a little bit now to perhaps one of the most egregious, you know, self-aggrandizing we'll ever see. Obviously, it's February. That means it's time for the Wrestling Observer Awards. And it's unfortunate where it's not just fans that enable this behavior, but it's also the AEW apologists. And so certainly we know who the prime suspects are, Patrick. We know it's Uncle Dave, Dave Meltzer. It's Brian Alvarez. It's everybody else that's associated with the Wrestling Observer newsletter. And, you know, case in point, bro, today, you know, we saw the list that came out for the Wrestling Observer Awards. And I got to tell you, I mean, this is just, I thought last year was disgraceful. I thought last year was laughable and probably really bad comedy. But you know what? Let's give credit to Dave Meltzer. He outdid himself. Last year's stupidity is now stupidity on HGH, steroids, and any other performance-enhancing narcotic you can think of with this year's Observer Awards. And for our audience who maybe aren't aware, you know, let's look at some of these categories here. And to no one's surprise, Patrick, Kenny Omega was voted as the Wrestler of the Year, earning 629 first-place votes. I don't know who that was. Maybe Dave, his mother, his cousin, I don't know, his sister, who knows, dog, cat, whatever. You know, second was Roman Reigns with only 90 first-place votes. Shinjo Takagi in third with 46 first-place votes. Bryan Danielson in fourth with 127 votes. Utami Aishishida with 134 first-place votes. CM Punk with 24 first-place votes in sixth. Sayuri coming up in seventh with 21 first-place votes. Hangman Adam Page, the reigning defending AEW champion, with 11 votes. Katsugi Nakajima with four first-place votes, number nine. And Jon Moxley running out the top 10 with only one first-place vote. Patrick, anybody that has eyes and ears knows that for the last calendar year, if not the last two calendar years, Roman Reigns has been the Wrestler of the Year. He has put on more compelling matches. His promos have been better. Yes, he's had Paul Heyman at his side, but guess what? Kenny Omega needed to have Don Callis at his side. Roman Reigns does not need him, does not need Paul Heyman at his side. He can cut very convincing promos as a ruthless heel. This is just, again, egregious. And, you know, obviously Omega's win, again, is just, it's laughable. It's, you know, it's Dave justifying that, yes, this is a guy who held three championships in three different promotions. This is not Vader, okay, folks? This is not Vader who held multiple championships on different continents. Yeah, sorry, Kenny Omega is not the Wrestler of the Year. But leave it to Dave Meltzer and the readership, Patrick, of the Wrestling Observer to justify this madness.
I'm not surprised. I don't know why people get worked up by this anymore. Like, you know what it is. You know what they're going to do. You know they're going to put over all the AEW guys. You know they're gonna shit on WWE at every turn, and they're gonna big these guys up to make them seem like they're bigger competitors than what they actually are. Vince doesn't need them. Vince could put out a publication himself. Vince created his own awards. He created the Slammies. Vince is like, hey, I have a Hall of Fame. I'm gonna honor myself, you know, and these other people that I want to pick up that are under the stuff that I own, you know, and. That's what he did. So he doesn't need the Wrestling Observer newsletter stuff. Like, that's whatever. Plus, once AEW came around, that whole thing changed. Before, it was pretty objective, you know? But now it's just, like, it's way too much. It's overkill. It's like, come on, man. Really? Like, really?
Well, speaking of overkill, obviously, the tag team of the year, to no one's surprise, is the Young Bucks. I think that's just foolish. I think if you talk about the tag team of the year, in terms of quality matches, in terms of storytelling, you got to give it to the Usos, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I have not seen what the breakdown was in terms of votes, first place votes, et cetera. I don't know who else was on the list. I mean, I'd make the case that, you know, the Usos should have won that award, hands down. But again, Uncle Dave and the readership, right, whatever that consists of, with the Wrestling Observer newsletter, somehow can justify the Young Bucks being the
yeah,
tag
but,
team
but,
of the
but
year.
They all like spot wrestling. They all like spot wrestling, dude. That's what they like. Like, they're into spot wrestling.
No,
they
want to
see dudes take, like, 55 Canadian destroyers and, like, kick out at 1.5, you know? Like, that's what they like. So, of course they're going to vote for this stuff. Come on.
No, like, I agree. Listen, I'm with you. Best on interviews / promos, MJF.
Okay,
as far as being a heel, I think that's – I can live with this. I would say Roman Reigns. I think I would call it a tie. I think what Roman's been doing for the last calendar year, 2 years as a ruthless heel, has been gold. It's been glorious, not to take anything away from Bobby Roode.
Well,
Roman
without cussing. That's the other thing. Roman don't cuss.
That's right. Yeah. You know what? I would have said it's a tie between MJF and Roman Reigns for best promos. Match of the year, you know, the cage match at All Out in Chicago last September, the Young Bucks, you know, defending the tag titles against the Lucha Brothers. Now, again, Dave made a point to say that it was determined solely by first place votes. That was not the match of the year. It was a high spot overkill match, if anything, on steroids once again. You know, I would not have called that the match of the year. I think there's a lot of other nominees that I could think of. I would argue Reigns Cena, as much as I, you know, don't like John Cena, that match, the storytelling, the background, that's a match of the year candidate. I would argue that Lashley and McIntyre at WrestleMania in Tampa, that's another match of the year I probably would have voted for. Lucha Brothers and Young Bucks, man, it was just spot after spot. It was a spot fest. It was 57 super kicks, 27 Canadian destroyers, 10 swantons. It was just so, I don't know. It wasn't for me, but again, that niche audience really, really liked it.
See, here's the thing. If they did all that stuff, and then at the end of the match, like Penta stabbed one of them to win the match, then I'd be like, you know what? That was worth it. Because they had to do all that to get to the point where they had to stab each other or shoot each other. Like if Matt Jackson pistol whipped Rey Fénix, I'd be like, oh, damn, this is nuts. And he'd be like, quit, quit right now. And he points a gun at his head, and that's how he beats him. Like, wow, that's crazy. Then I'd be like, okay, fair. That's really fucking out there. Pardon my French, but yeah.
No, I'm
but I mean, it's overkill, and these guys like this stuff. So again, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. Like Meltzer's gonna come up with this category, like wrestlers that eat pizza the best way, the Young Bucks. Like you know wrestlers that hold a pencil the best, the Young Bucks. You know, wrestlers that make the best waffles, the Young Bucks. You know, like he's just gonna keep coming up with these ridiculous categories to put over the Young Bucks. So. Any category that the Young Bucks or Kenny are in, they're going to win no matter what.
Well, speaking of Kenny, again, he was the winner in the feud of the year. Him and Hangman Page, that was not the feud of the year. I mean, for the love of God. I mean, it was a short program to get the belt on Hangman. I get it. You know, he came back after a paternity leave, essentially, won the ladder match. And, okay, you know, fine. You know, he challenged Hangman. That was not the feud of the year. I can think of a lot of other feuds. Again, Cena and Reigns, that buildup, Lesnar and Reigns. Again, I just think it's – I really have to question, Patrick, sort of – and again, I'm not trying to say this in a sanctimonious, condescending way, which I can be sometimes. I have to kind of question the intellect here of who these readers are and these voters are for the Observer newsletter because I just don't think they're being objective. But what else is new? Most improved wrestler, Ty Conti. I like Ty Conti. She's nice to look at.
Can I say something real quick? Can I just cut you off there for a sec? Because in regards to feud of the year, I mean, dude, you could go indies. You could go a lot of different ways. You know, Ricky Shane Page against Nick Gage. That was a long-standing feud. You know, you could look at Okada and Will Ospreay. Okada and Will Ospreay was a really good feud last year. You know, like, I don't know. It's a bit ridiculous, but yeah. You know, as you said, it's no objectivity whatsoever.
It's awful. Most improved Ty Conti. Again, really nice girl to look at. She's improved, I would say, yes. I mean, I think that, you know, not drastically improved. I mean, obviously from her NXT days.
Who else was in the category?
Yeah, that's the problem.
That's the question,
man.
Too.
Yeah, I won't waste my hard-earned money to subscribe to the newsletter, so I don't get to see sort of like the other nominees. You know, obviously, it's just right now it's just listing winners. It'd be interesting to see who those nominees were. Most underrated wrestler was Ricochet. Not a lot of TV time this past calendar year. Not a guy that I think has been used in a way that I think fans would have wanted to see him used when he was such a breakout star at NXT when he first got called up to the main roster. I think him and, you know, he was booked in such a way that made him, again, inspiring, you know, just death-defying with some of his stunts and his moves in the ring.
Yeah, he's the high spot guy.
Yeah, he definitely is. Rookie of the Year, this is ridiculous. Jade Cargill. It's funny to me when I see AEW fans justifying something like that. I was reading social media today and seeing, obviously, you know, and again, listen, if you win the award, whatever, you want to plug it into social media, you want to, you know, pat yourself on the back. Hey, no one, listen, I'm never going to begrudge anyone for putting themselves over. Okay. I do it every day. So I'm not going to do that. But if we're being fair about Rookie of the Year, I mean, we can kind of make the case that, you know, there's probably other wrestlers that fit that build. I think Jade Cargill is, you know, she's still very green. I think they're booking her in a very dominant way. I would not have given her that award. That's me personally, Patrick. Anybody that comes up to mind for you for Rookie of the Year?
I don't disagree with it. I think that she has a look. I think that they're working with her on how to get better. She's incredibly green, but she's the only other thing that they can do right now, or she's the only thing really that they can do that isn't Britt Baker to try and make something of like their own thing. You know what I mean? Like not have to hire a WWE chick or another chick, because I mean, look at Ruby Soho, you know, that chick came over there. She's a really good worker and they just had her job the entire time. And now she's just kind of like, meh, another person on the roster, you know? So
no,
look, I'm not against it. I'm not against it because I see it. Like, and when we talked about that match before, that championship match, you know, I said they're probably going to give it to Cargill because she checks off a lot of boxes. So, I mean, as far as their homegrown talent, because she's really their homegrown talent,
yeah.
You know, they got to continue to push her and they got to continue to feature her in a strong way. And hopefully she'll improve over time.
No, I agree. Best non-wrestler, Paul Heyman. I don't disagree with that. I think Paul Heyman's role in the role that he's played, you know, in the storyline about being divided between Paul, you know, Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar. I think it's been a good tug of war a little bit with Paul Heyman. Again, he's brilliant on the microphone. He's brilliant in the presentation. No, you know, I don't disagree there. Today I made a point to go on Twitter and just roast this guy because there's no way that anyone with ears would say that the best announcer for the second year in a row is Excalibur. But I just think that's awful. While the readership at the Wrestling Observer have the worst announcer as Corey Graves, I would flip it. Corey Graves, maybe Pat McAfee to some extent, I think has been a welcome breath of fresh air on WWE programming. But there is no way, Patrick, that Excalibur, the mark with a mask, not just 1 year, but 2 years in a row now, is the best announcer. I'm sorry. It makes me question, again, the intelligence quotient of AEW fans and the Observer readership, because there's no way this guy's a good announcer at all.
They're going to put over their product. That's it. They're just going to put over their product. Like, I don't know what else to say beyond that, you know? I mean, he kind of puts himself over more than he puts the product over, which is kind of funny. He'll always talk about how he wrestled somebody in a back alley in, like, Nicaragua somewhere. And I always find that kind of funny. But, I mean, they're gonna put Excalibur over. They're going to put all the people, all the weak parts, all the stuff that they know are the weak parts, they're going to put that over the most. And, you know, Corey Graves, like, yeah, he goes a little overboard with the homages to Bobby Heenan and stuff like that. I think, you know, once, twice, you know, but no three times a lady there. And, you know, I think he should have kind of just left it as it was and let Bobby's stuff stand. But he's very good at what he does, and he's definitely better at what he does than what Excalibur does. But like I said, they're going to put their people over.
Again, it's not surprising. Second year in a row, the promoter of the year and the booker of the year goes to Anthony Khan. Wow, you want to talk about Uncle Dave. Listen, can we file an Oprah request, Patrick, to see maybe the bank statements of Dave Meltzer? Because there's got to be a direct deposit from Shad Khan somewhere in Uncle Dave's bank statements, because, my God, promoter of the year and booker of the year, there have been some poorly booked pay-per-views and Dynamites as well as Rampages. If this is what the readership and Observer thinks is good booking, I'd hate to see what they think is bad booking.
I mean, like I said before, they're going to put over their weakest parts, you know, the biggest. And Tony Khan, you know, he's a decent matchmaker. He can put together hot things here and there, but he doesn't do it consistently. I mean, I'm not surprised, dude. They're going to put over all their people. So
it's
booker of the year, promoter
of
the year.
Yeah, promotion of the year to no one's surprise. All Elite Wrestling, best weekly TV show, Dynamite, best gimmick, surprising, Roman Reigns, worst gimmick, Alexa Bliss. I think they're wrong on that, because Alexa Bliss was not the worst gimmick. If we're going to talk about the worst gimmick, I would argue probably anything the Bucks did last year, anything they did, whether it's their outfits, whether it's their promos, that was the worst. Alexa Bliss, say what you want, sold merch, was compelling as a demonic character, as a spinoff from The Fiend. And, you know, Vince likes her. Vince knew that this is going to be compelling. And, again, it shows the character development that Alexa Bliss can enable. She's been that baby face. She's been that ruthless heel. Now you can play that demonic, you know, Linda Blair / exorcist / possessed type of character. I think that's a bad choice by the readership, but what else is new? Best pro wrestling book, Mox by John Moxley. I haven't had a chance to read it. You know, I'm not really going to have an objection.
Yeah,
to that,
I've heard nothing but positive things from everybody that's read it. So.
Best pro wrestling documentary, Dark Side of the Ring with Brian Pillman. I think that was one of the better episodes, probably one of the highest rated episodes of Dark Side of the Ring, which I love as a series. Again, I'm a fan of pro wrestling.
Yeah.
I lived through a lot of what they document. I think it would have been nice to see Brian Pillman Jr. kind of build off the momentum about the name of his father and maybe kind of, you know, have him in more high-profile matches and segments that hasn't worked out for Brian Pillman Jr. Again, he's still young. He's still very green. Let's find out. Best wrestling maneuver, Hangman Adam Page's Buckshot Lariat. I disagree. It's either Roman Reigns. It's either Bobby Lashley. It's either Lesnar with the F5. It's, you know, take your pick, but it's not the Lariat. Again, no disrespect to, you know, the AEW champion, but it's not the Lariat. Worst television show, WWE Raw. Again, this is the pure bias of the readership of The Observer, Patrick.
Yeah, of course. I mean, is it great? No. Is it the worst? Come on. You know? I mean,
some other categories here. I'm not going to go through all of them, ladies and gentlemen, but one that really caught my eye for the second year in a row, the most disgusting promotional tactic, according to the readership of the Wrestling Observer, WWE firing wrestlers during a pandemic while setting record profits. Pat, I mean, really, I would love to see what the second one was.
That's the most disgusting promotional tactic. That's a category. How long has that category been around? Did Ric Flair like win that sometime? I don't know. For like, I don't know, maybe sending pictures to Macho Man of Miss Elizabeth and him. Did he win it for that? I mean, how long has that been around? Like, if that hasn't been around like for a long time, bro, that's specifically a category to shit on WWE.
Absolutely.
Like,
Anybody knows that. Bruiser Brody Memorial Award for Best Brawler, John Moxley. Don't disagree. I think that, you know, maybe Eddie Kingston. Again, we don't know what the nominees were per se, what the list was.
Yeah.
But, you know, no argument about John Moxley. Best High-Flying Wrestler, Ray Phoenix. I disagree. I think, you know, when you think about either one of the Usos, I would say is probably better than Rey Fénix. I think that's just a high spot wrestler, but that's me. U.S. and Canada MVPs, Kenny Omega, disagree. It's got to be Roman Reigns. Globally, it's Roman Reigns. But Japanese MVP, Shingo Takagi, don't disagree there, Patrick. I know you're more of New Japan enthusiast and
Okada.
Aficionado. Yeah, Okada. Okay, very good. Mexican MVP, El Hijo de Vikingo. I'm not going to say much about that. The European MVP, Will Ospreay. I don't disagree with that. I think that's a good pick.
Yeah.
Non-heavyweight MVP, Darby Allin. Jesus, I mean, this guy's going to be dead before he's 30 with the punishment he's putting his body through. I wouldn't call him the non-heavyweight MVP, Patrick.
I mean, I don't know who else you can really throw it on, to be honest. I can't really think of anybody that's a much smaller wrestler like that. That isn't, either a woman, or a child.
We can't base this on age because I would still say that it's still Rey Mysterio. I mean, yeah.
Could it technically be a junior heavyweight champion? Could it technically be like Takahashi or something?
It's a non-heavyweight MVP. I would say that even 30 years later,
it's
still Rey Mysterio.
It's a nonsense category in a nonsense award. So.
Women's wrestling MVP, Utami Hashishida. I don't disagree. I think she's had a good body of work for the last calendar year. These are aside from the other egregious ones, best box office draw, Patrick, is CM Punk.
Hold on a second. CM Punk is the best box office draw. In a universe where Brock Lesnar exists, CM Punk is the best box office draw. Are we talking about Earth 5, Earth 6? Is that what we're talking about?
I think maybe it's the metaverse, maybe it's the multiverse, maybe it's an alternate universe where, again, Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns do not exist. I think this is
Bad
just,
Bunny? Bad, does Bad, Bad Bunny exist? Because Bad Bunny is a bigger box office draw than CM Punk.
Absolutely. It takes us back to the segment itself, to sort of the thesis of what we're talking about today is the fact that I think AEW fans and, their fandom is enabled by these awful publications, whether it's – and again, I don't want to defecate on Pro Wrestling Illustrated. It's a magazine I grew up reading. I still respect to some extent. But it's – whether it's PWI, but now the Observer Newsletter, the problem is it's these publications, it's these awards – that are enabling AEW fans to be honest, to think that their product is better than it really is. And it's not.
Yeah.
And I think that's sense of lacking self-awareness and just being oblivious. And I think this is what the Observer Newsletter really, really empowers. I mean, obviously, Beck's most charismatic wrestler of 2021, CM Punk. That's not even close, man. It's either Roman Reigns, it's Bobby Lashley, let's be honest. And again, give an assist to MVP helping them with this, but it's not CM Punk, okay? It's not – I'm sorry. Again, it's these awards enable this sort of lack of self-awareness. And I think – and unfortunately, that permeates into why AEW fans are developing this reputation online as being fickle, as being easily triggered, and being overly sensitive. I think, again, these Observer Awards do an immense disservice to the fandom in AEW.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, I mean, for me, I'm going to argue, I'll go against what you're saying in this case, and I'll say that it's actually good business for them because they have an audience that's going to keep them alive. So they got to keep those people happy because, let's be honest, the people that are mainstream aren't going to go and buy those magazines. They're not going to go and get that, But there's marks out there that'll collect those posters of Kenny Omega, in the centerfold and all that stuff and put it on their wall. And, there's people that'll do that still. So I think they're doing good business by picking up all those sore marks that don't want to watch Vince anymore.
It's really astonishing to me that, again, you know, people are going to read this. We know why Meltzer publishes it. He wants the clickbait. He wants the heat. He wants people like you and I doing podcasts, talking about it. He wants Cornette to talk about it. He wants Conan and Disco Inferno to talk about it. He wants Wade Keller to talk about it. He wants, obviously, Conrad along with Bischoff. I think it's going to be very interesting in the next 48 hours what the reaction is going to be online about this, Patrick. I think people are going to...
It's
going to
be hilarious.
Yeah. I think it's going to be... I can't wait to listen to Cornette. I can't wait to listen to Bischoff. I think it's... Again, it's a microcosm, bro, of a serious problem that exists within the pro wrestling spectrum, specifically when it comes to AEW and its fans, where they just don't seem to have self-awareness. Now, I'm not saying this to be mean-spirited or condescending, but that's what the body of work is telling you. And that's what the viral reception is online, Patrick.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that they're just pumping up their thing. They want it to be bigger than what it is. They do have a lot of good workers, and they're hoping that it'll pan out in the long run. But I'm sorry. Like, I just don't think that if you're not hooking an audience now, what's it going to matter in 6 months from now? You know, you got to pick up these casuals, dude. Casuals are kind of like swing voters. You know, you got to pick them up, man. You got to be able to sway them somehow to come and watch your product. And there's a lot of people that don't like WWE that they could have picked up a long time ago, especially considering the roster that they have. But they failed to do that because they don't do hot stuff consistently. And then in between, you got dudes like, you know, Orange Cassidy and Danhausen and all this stuff. And look, those guys, they're good for what they do. But, like, I don't think that's the kind of stuff that translates to, like, you know, mainstream audiences. It doesn't. And Vince does his goofy shit, too, but Vince does his goofy stuff in a different way, you know? And he knows what's, for the most part, what works and what doesn't. And even if it doesn't, it's still going to get heat anyway because everybody's just going to shit on whatever Vince does no matter what. So, and still for him.
I agree. Folks, we're going to leave it right there for this week here. And, again, we hope you really enjoyed this show. For this week here. Again, a lot of wrestling this weekend. Elimination Chamber tomorrow on Peacock at 12 noon. Impact Wrestling's No Surrender tomorrow night on Impact Plus. Obviously, the road to WrestleMania continues. Certainly, we're going to keep covering this and all the big news stories coming up as we'll bring you our next episode in March. Before we go, folks, again, if you want to write to the show, hey, drop us an email at our inbox, workingthemarks@gmail.com. Once again, workingthemarks, all one word, @gmail.com. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram @working_the_marks. And also make sure you check us out on Twitter @working_marks. And folks, listen, share today's episode on your social media. Sharing is caring, folks. Tell everyone you know about your favorite wrestling podcast here in New Jersey. And certainly, again, our listenership is growing. It's only possible with you, our loyal listening audience. So please, do your part. Share it this weekend. Obviously, a lot of you are off for the long weekend for President's Day. Take a listen. Share it on your social media links and show your support for Working the Marks. Patrick, any closing words to your brother as we approach Elimination Chamber weekend?
I just want to say to everybody, you know, check out the Child Actors on Instagram. Yeah, can't wait to be back with another show. And can't wait to talk about some wrestling a little bit more. But in the meantime, you people keep checking it out. Come and fact check the show if you can. And from what I understand, breaking news, I think Neil Young is leaving Blog Talk Radio because we're on Blog Talk Radio. So,
well,
I guess we've got ourselves in quite a pickle with our views here, huh?
That's right. You know, listen, we're just out there doing God's work, ladies and gentlemen, and telling you, what we would say is the best take on today's professional wrestling. That's right. Fact check us whenever you can. And let us know what you like about the show, what you don't like. Again, folks, reach out to us on social media, on our inbox. We'd love to hear from you. Again, it's because of you fans this show is indeed possible. So, folks, again, enjoy President's Day weekend. Enjoy the great weekend of wrestling. We'll come to you coming up in the first weekend of March for our next show here on Blog Talk Radio. Again, check out previous episodes by going to www.blogtalkradio.com. /Working the Marks, and certainly make sure that you share that. It's available free of charge on any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. Download it. Once again, folks, www.blogtalkradio.com/workingthemarks. We'd love to hear what you have to say about the newest wrestling podcast on the social media airwaves and also, once again, on Blog Talk Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, he is New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst, Patrick Vincent Rivera. I'm New Jersey's premier analyst, Fernando Uribe. That's right. Saying so long, folks. Enjoy the wrestling, and we'll see you next time right here on Working the Marks on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you.